Show's animation podcast. I'm Joe, and I'm with Amy today and Aelia.
Hello.
Hello.
So today we are talking about Harley Quinn Season 1. So this is a deep dive where we'll go into each episode. We're just going to jump into going into each episode, sharing our favourite thoughts about it. Are there any general thoughts about the series, except that it's awesome, that we want to get out of the way before we go into each episode, guys?
I have so many thoughts about the thing in general, but probably not great for an intro, I'm afraid. it's great. I love it.
A deep dive, as one might do with a kite.
No, I think you mean a deep dive as one might do into a vat of acid.
Ooh.
Or indeed margarita mix.
The most elaborate, in the most overly elaborate plan ever to shock someone into realization.
It's a good plan.
I mean, it's good timing to do. So the time of recording, there's been two seasons out. We're focusing on season one today. And they've announced a spin-off show for Kite Man, I believe.
Have they now?
Yeah, have you not heard this? Yeah. So that's very exciting. I didn't realise you guys weren't aware, yeah?
There are no words.
So he's definitely...
No, there are. Hell yeah.
So, excellent. So we start off episode one. Obviously, we've got Harley Quinn and the Joker together. As a lot of fandom knows, the Joker kind of would expect, based on previous Harley Quinn appearances, the Joker kind of betrays Harley Quinn. And then she goes through a forced period of, you know, contemplation, like going to Arkham Asylum. And then the first of the crew we meet is Poison Ivy. You know, it sets up the show quite nicely, doesn't it, in terms of the relationship with Joker and Poison Ivy and the kind of trying to stand up for herself and get her away from the Joker and that poisonous relationship.
And it does impress you right from the start with the voice performances. They're actually really good.
Yeah, the voice performances are incredible. I'm going to be entirely honest. Much as I love Harley Quinn, I didn't really love the first episode. In fact, I think I was watching it with Amy, and both of our reactions afterwards were a bit, nah, we can maybe give it another shot if we're bored and don't have anything else going on, but it's trying a bit too hard.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. It's a bit, it goes for a lot of gore early on, like... seeming like that's all it will be. It's a bit chaotic and crazy. So it's not the best episode.
It's not just the gore as well. Like, it establishes very early on in the opening scene that the show has quite a lot of critiques of capitalism, but it does it in such a heavy-handed way with the Joker as pretending to be a banker talking about their favourite pastime of fucking the poor next to a massive pile of money. It's like, I get that the show's never going for subtle, but...
And then doing the Heath Ledger Joker thing of setting it all on fire.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's not quite established his own identity at this point either.
Yeah, I still think the show at this point was trying a bit too hard to be like the Venture Brothers. And that's not a bad thing if you can get that right. And I think later on it does a lot better at that, but in its own way.
It definitely gets an awful lot better in its critiques of capitalism. Like, they're still not subtle as such, but they're a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more aimed at things other than caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it also sets up its kind of way of doing feminism, where you have people straight away not taking Harley seriously because she's a girl or she's the Joker's girlfriend or whatever, and sort of getting her to beat them up to prove them wrong, which is the kind of feminism a lot of us are used to from shows that, like, just try to put it in as a sort of token effort without really grappling with it in any way.
Such a girl boss.
thankfully that as well does get better throughout the show, although I think to less of an extent than the anti-capitalist themes, it does still stay in throughout the show a lot more with the sort of individual people just being a bit misogynist and that being most of what's being railed against.
But we'll get to Queen of Fables.
Sorry, yes, getting a bit ahead of myself there. Episode one.
Yeah, but I think that's a really good point though, because like when Queen of Fables appears, which we'll talk about later in the episode, like the feminism is a weird, I wrote down weirdly powerful feminist message, given that it's a tax guidebook, like giving it. So yeah, for sure, it's definitely got those themes, even if it gets better running with them later in the series. I mean, I think on the positive side with the first episode, it's still funny, and as you guys correctly said, the voice acting is great, and I think I quite like the early embers of the relationship between Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. There's some really funny, sweet, like enjoyable moments there, like even in this first episode, I thought.
I like the conversation they're having early on where Harley's just nonchalantly killing or severely maiming a bunch of guards, and Ivy's having a conversation with her while it's happening, completely unflapped by what's going on. I think it does quite well to set up part of Ivy's character as being like quite this calm, detached person who doesn't care about a lot of things, whilst also kind of setting up the universe as a place where this kind of violence isn't really a big deal.
And it sets that character establishment for her, like, really, like, initially it looks like it's setting up a kind of role for her in the show that she does fall into, but they continue to flesh that out, and that's what makes it more interesting as it goes on.
Yeah, definitely. She gets so much development in the show, and it's so great much. To see.
I know it sounds really goofy, like, given, like, that quite deep analysis. Like, just Harley and Poison Ivy arguing about the Thai food order.
And then great. That's something they have throughout the series. Yeah. Is just this general chemistry and this back and forth that's just so realistic between two friends.
It's like those just normal moments that friends have together. And you don't see enough of that in a lot of shows.
You really don't, and it really sells the friendship and the relationship in general.
And it's really nice seeing like Harley go into like a new costume at the end of the episode, I thought. Claiming her own identity, plus I just thought it was a cooler costume.
It's a much better costume.
Yeah. it's taking her from the classic costume into the modern costume and giving a good setup for it.
I mean, I've read some of the Harley Quinn comics, and the attempts to modernize her attire are like very like interesting. That's the kindest way I can put it. But they nail it with that one. I thought it was really good.
The video games have done some decent stuff with that, like the Telltale ones.
Yeah,
it's another thing that just like neatly showcases part of Ivy and her relationship, because she spent all this time going around in that old costume looking, let's be honest, absolutely ridiculous. And when she finally changes it, she's like, why am I still wearing that old costume? And Ivy's just like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of like she'd wanted to tell her this whole time how ridiculous it is, but she hasn't, because she's being really patient with her. And that's like so much of their relationship is Ivy holding back on, like, telling Harley that she's doing something really stupid. I mean, obviously she spends a lot of time telling her also that she's doing something really stupid, but also a lot of the time she's holding back and being like, okay, no, she needs to sort of get to this herself. And it's just quite nice to see early on her just being a supportive friend about the fact that, yeah, she did look truly ridiculous.
And she did learn a lot from a very good psychiatrist.
She did.
That was actually part of my concern when I first watched the first episode, was that that's all Poison Ivy would do would be to, like, be the sensible, like, one, like, critiquing her. But but it grows into so much more, and it's not just that. As you said, the relationship's great, and while touching all these themes, the relationships, they just have such great chemistry with each other, the crew, and just a joy to watch.
I absolutely loved where the plot went, though, with the whole the whole setup that Ivy did in it. That's absolutely beautiful.
We try to work backwards from like the end point of, like, of how they'd have to set that up. It's ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
But yeah, it's fantastic though. Agreed. Okay, cool. We should probably move on to episode two then.
This was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead a little bit in the episode, but my main note was about the bar dressing up very coolly for this, like, to crash this party, and
they have a lion!
And it's a bar mitzvah. It's fantastic. I love that little twist in the episode. I thought this episode was immediately a step up from the first one.
Yeah.
There's just so much, like, great, there's so much great stuff in it.
Yeah, it was a definite step up from the first episode. Bane! One of my notes is just Bane in all caps with hearts.
That's crazy. That's one of my notes, too.
I think you mean Bane!
I sadly can't do the voice, but yes, that is what I meant.
I literally have the same note, which is just his name and exclamation marks.
Mm-hmm. he's just such a standout whenever he's on screen, to be honest. And I think this is the first time we see him.
Yeah. It's an incredible example of just running with a fandom meme.
You know more about that than me, because I'm not really well versed in the comics or any of the other incarnations of him. So, do you want to talk about that?
It's just how this became such a running joke, to the point where anyone in anything, like in general conversation, mentions Bane, and someone will start talking in that voice from the films. And it's a specific parody of the film voice. And to see it just played completely as the character in this is incredible.
It's fantastic. Because they take like an incredibly intimidating villain from both the comics and the Dark Knight Rises. And they just run with it. It's so much fun. And like, we meet Kite Man, of course.
I put my order in months ago.
It's just such a perfect voice for just being sort of slightly sad at being bullied and like,
yeah,
wanting to get back at the world.
Yeah, he's weirdly empathetic, isn't he?
Yeah, like, and like, the character's still a massive freaking douche, but you find yourself sympathizing with him so much because of how the other characters are treating him and because of the voice.
I mean, there's a lot of like just really outright funny stuff in it as well.
And of course, we have another character introduced,
Kite Man, like whose chat up line, I think, to Poison Ivy is, "Have you ever seen Gotham Central Park?" He's about to say "from the sky," and she interrupts his line and finishes it for him. He's just fantastic, despite his ability being very limited by the weather conditions.
I mean, that's a part of his character though.
Yeah.
Because he is the guy people are thinking of when, or he's the very concept of when people say, "Oh, but to have the confidence of a mediocre white guy." He is the most mediocre white guy you could find. And yet he has so much confidence in, like, himself, his abilities, and everything. And it's because, and you don't get to see that in this episode, but later on you get to see, like, he just has stuff way easier than other people. Like, people take him serious, like, some people take him seriously, like the goons and stuff, for no particular reason. So, yeah, stuff just works out for him, despite the fact that, like, he's literally just a dude with a kite.
And he's oblivious to it as well, isn't he?
So oblivious.
Yeah.
Yeah, to his luxury and like how he's perceived.
Yeah, I mean, the whole subplot there, the whole B-plot of that episode is him giving the kids Ivy's pheromone, and then she panics and they need to go back and get the antidote, and he's absolutely convinced this is just her attempting to sleep with him.
Yeah, she...
I really wish I had the confidence of a mediocre white guy. But like that's what she ends up liking in him a lot, I think,
yeah.
Is that he has all that unearned confidence, but it is confidence nevertheless, and it's confidence that she doesn't have, and like she tries to mask the fact that she doesn't with all of her biting remarks and stuff.
Mm.
But see, like secretly or not so secretly, just wishes that she could actually be as confident as this guy.
But maybe mixed with like a little bit of desperation and pity as well, I think.
Possibly.
Yeah.
This whole episode also sets up a bit of the dynamic with the Joker and the rest of the Legion, and continues to develop that whole thing of him basically bullying anyone he can get away with.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Holly even like points it out to the supervillains, right? About like the abuse they're taking.
And also the fact that like they use the fact that Kite Man's introduced here at the same time Joker is. So when they're fighting, Joker says to Bane, stop messing around with Kite Man. Like, what the fuck? What's he gonna do? Like, hit you with a kite? He doesn't even have... Like, he doesn't do anything. And then, not long afterwards, Harley's saying to them, why do you even listen to Joker? He doesn't even have powers. His only power is bullying you into doing what he wants.
Yeah.
Like, which is just a nice way of showing, like, yeah, Kite Man's ridiculous, but so is Joker?
Yeah.
And the only difference between them is that Joker happens to be at the head of this organization. Well, not at the head, but, like, pretty much running it.
And it shows, like, the fact they're able to dissect that shows they have a really good understanding of the characters and what makes them tick and their outside perspective on them, for sure. And the way they, like, kind of balance, like, all this stuff, crazy stuff going on. I mean, you got Scarecrow, you got Two-Face, you got tons of stuff going on in this episode, but you can just follow it and stick with it. It's just a great watch.
I feel really sorry for Joshua.
One thing I will say about the episode, and I'm not going to like go into lots of detail because I'm super unqualified to do it, but it is the first episode where we start to see some hints of anti-Semitism, which is slightly not great. They made a character that was canonically a bundle of like anti-Semitic tropes into an actual Jewish character, and then bundled on like more of the anti-Semitic tropes with like holding the bat mitzvah in the Gotham Mint and things like having money bags as the gifts and stuff like that, which like you can kind of see what they were trying to go for with like they were trying to show how embedded the villains of the story are in the system, and like liken that to like hyper-capitalism and like being in league with the banks and stuff. But the fact that they took a character who was already a lot of anti-Semitic tropes, made them Jewish, and then made the bar mitzvah be the center of that is not great. And sadly, they do a few other things like this in other episodes, so it does bear mentioning.
Yeah, and I guess, like, given the history of these kind of tropes, like, in TV and movies, regardless of their intention, it's just best to steer clear, really, of it. Like, and then so I think that's a fair point, actually. I mean, it didn't come up with my notes, so, but I can kind of see what you mean as you talk through that.
I mean, it was something, like, I noticed, like, watching through the episodes myself, and then I looked up to be like, how are other people thinking about it, and saw a bunch of complaints by Jewish people about the show in general.
Yeah.
Which included this episode. And then the writers hitting back, like, a lot of the writers are Jewish, and, like, I think, like, two of the showrunners are Jewish. So, like, they hit back with, like, okay, yeah, I can see where you're coming from, but that's not actually, like, what we meant or anything. And as I said, I'm not really qualified to say anything intelligent about it, but thought I'd just mention it.
Yeah, it is definitely worth being aware of that, and it's good that the writers responded constructively, I think, to that kind of discussion. So the third episode,
getting a crew together.
Yeah. So I mean, there's so many new faces in this. So I think, as we mentioned before, the Queen of Fables, albeit in the form of a tax spook. And gets the plot rolling. And so that inspires Harley Quinn to go for the... I mean, I love the whole idea of going for the least employable people. Like, that's a revelation, and that's how she's able to get a crew together. And so I thought that was a lot of fun, and you got introduced to, like, you know, maybe the kind of crew members that maybe don't get as much attention as some of the more famous villains, I guess.
Can we also talk about the character introduced here that we don't get to see on screen for some time? The is it the Harley Quinn highway?
Oh. Oh, the Harley Quinn highway is an absolute joy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like this episode because it starts to establish the, like, TV and celebrity kind of gossip interest in heroes versus villains. And just, like, how much of a damn spectacle it all is.
Yeah.
I like that they took that concept of, like, people watching heroes and villains fight and stuff and getting excited and turned it into, no, this is like basically all people are getting out of it. Like, they're actually rooting for the heroes or the villains or whatever. They're interested in their relationships between each other.
It's reality TV and gossip magazines.
Yeah, it is. And it has quite a lot of implications for the heroes and the villains themselves that, like, get explored later on in episodes. But this is the first episode that establishes that's going on.
And there's some great like satire, like, within that, I think, definitely. Like, definitely that kind of gossip and, like, reality TV culture balls. I love how Lex Luthor, like, denounces Dr. Psycho for PR purposes. I thought that was great.
Yeah,
it, like, I mean, I've got in my notes performative wokeness.
Yep.
Like, there's definitely a lot of performative wokeness going on in this universe.
Doing performative wokeness.
But it's not just the villains. Like, it's absolutely the heroes as well. And, like, a lot of people in the universe. Like, I think that this universe is in many ways more woke than our universe, to the point where it's become normalized enough that it's on a lot of axes, if not all of them, it's seen as bad form to not be woke, and so where people aren't, you do have all this performative wokeness. And, like, the most obvious example of course, is, well, I can't say his name. Amy, if you would.
Oh! Dr. Psycho. The cunt guy.
Yeah, that one. Like, with him having to pretend to not be a massive misogynist.
Yeah.
And all the people denouncing him for being a massive misogynist. And just the absolutely ridiculously over-the-top reaction that happens the two times in the episode that he does say that word is quite funny, but it's not... It doesn't look like it's taking the piss out of... It doesn't look like it's taking the piss out of, like, wokeness itself.
Yeah.
It's just taking the piss out of how disproportional people's response to that one thing is and how they're performing about that one thing.
Yeah.
When not caring about other things.
I did like the whole thing of, like, the world stopping spinning. It's a classic reference.
That is one of my favourite things about Harley Quinn. And it does this way better than a lot of other shows I've seen, where it can like critique that kind of performative wokeness. Is a great way of phrasing it, but at the same time, not in a sneering way that writes off like all those concerns.
Yeah, exactly. It's not
this message, and yeah.
Yeah, it's critiquing the whole thing of literally just putting on the show of appearing to care about those things.
And a lot of other shows I come across that don't do that. they just either criticize everything, or they have like a slightly deliberately politically incorrect and difficult like bent to them.
South Park and Snide.
Yeah, that my mind too, definitely. Family Guy, like they're kind of the obvious ones, but I'm sure there's plenty of other examples too. And we see Zeus being like
Another thing I love about the episode is establishing that the world has things like Underworld Talent Incorporated and villain conferences and things like that. Like the show really does so much to show how enmeshed in society the villains are.
And the way it goes after motivational speaker culture, which, to be honest, if you want some real-life supervillains, look there.
I mean, to be fair, that's quite low-hanging fruit. Lots of shows go after motivational speaker culture because it's quite obviously bad. But yeah, they definitely do a good job of that.
And we still haven't mentioned the other character.
Clayface!
Ah, how good is
Clayface is an absolute joy.
Clayface is half of my favourite characters in this show.
Is your favourite character his clumsy divorcee?
I quite like the one at the university.
Oh yeah, she's great. I love that his voice like comes through while he's trying to act. Like he'll be doing something and then suddenly it'll just be in his voice and then it'll go back to the voice of the character, and it's just so funny when it's happening.
It's a later episode, but episode 6, where he's being the cop, he's been doing this, as you say, the same thespian voice as he does it. It's fantastic. that joke never gets old.
His voice just never gets old.
And his commitment to like the part, that playing the role in the part, is fantastic.
It's also wild to think that it's him and the Joker being played by the same guy. He's got range.
I didn't know that. I knew who was playing the Joker, but I didn't realise he was playing Clayface as well.
Yeah.
Respect.
That's incredible. The process of like finding that voice must have been so much fun as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If we go into episode 4 then, this is Harley's desperate quest to have a suitable nemesis.
Like,
worthy of her, or worthy of gaining her more attention at least. And Robin keeps interfering.
Yeah, this episode like goes quite a lot further on the thing I was talking about with the celebrity culture and stuff. Like obsessing over heroes and villains and which ones are nemesis, and treating it like it's some kind of like romantic relationship between them.
Oh, the Tawny Show.
Yes, the Tawny Show. Calling like Joker, Batman, Harley love triangle at the end. stuff like that, and like, of course, the nemesis talk that Batman has with Robin, where he talks about, oh, he wasn't in. It wasn't until his, what was it, mid-20s until he got his first nemesis. But you want your nemesis to be someone special, someone you can see being your nemesis for the rest of your life. Which is hilarious in like how it's treating it like a relationship.
It does though play into the whole thing of like who the Joker chose to save.
Yes, yeah. With the whole, oh, it's always been Batman that Harley says in episode one. It's like, yeah, Joker is just absolutely... if he's not actually romantically interested in Batman, he's about as close as you can get without actually being.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Like, when they're arguing, I think Joker's like, no, no, he's with me! We're together! And stuff like that. But it does also play into the whole thing of the heroes not actually trying to properly like stop the villains from doing bad things, because Batman's talking about having a nemesis that you can see being your nemesis for the rest of your life. Well, if you were an effective hero, then they wouldn't be your nemesis for the rest of your life, because you'd stop them doing crimes somehow. But of course, they don't seem to want that. They just seem to want to play this game of heroes versus villains.
Yeah, which makes sense, like, even the ego like all these guys have, and the fact they're dressing up in costumes doing this kind of stuff. So yeah, it definitely goes further on those themes. I think that's really true. I mean, we get to see King Shark in this episode too.
I like King Shark.
Yeah.
He's really sweet.
Until he's not.
Until he's not.
And we get to see shark repellent.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a nice little nod, wasn't it? I mean, it's quite good about the show that it does its own thing whilst having these little like knowing nods to things like unobtrusively. That was a lot of fun, I thought. And pretty terrifying, like the way he was chasing them at the end.
We get more of the sort of like. Subtle things, well, not subtle, but like more interesting things against hypercapitalism, where Psycho's like, credit union, that's just a poor person bank, we robbed a real one with a vault and money and predatory lending practices.
I love that line.
Yeah, it's just like things like that come up to the show throughout the show, and like even Psycho, who's like absolutely fucking terrible person, like, still has like an understanding of these kinds of things, which is quite a cool little detail and helps the conversations that the crew have with one another be more interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And you can still like all the characters you enjoy spending time with, even though he is like a horrible person, as you say. I think we get to meet Cyborg Man as well, of course. The landlord, like, briefly at the end of the episode, like, properly. And he becomes a great character too. There's a lot more of him in the next episode, I think, which we might as well move on to, I think. So episode 5 being Harley Quinn. I love Jason Alexander, like, being Cyborg Man. Cybernetic landlord.
The former CIA cybernetic landlord.
Yeah, so sadly he was another character that people were talking about being problematic, particularly with the manner in which he decided to deal with the problem in this episode. So we should probably like give the summary of the episode and then can talk about that.
I mean, they're basically looking for the Harley Quinn's new lair, aren't they? And then it goes into a interesting deep dive into like Harley's brain, of course. And it's just a lot of fun to see those awesome crew members who talked about like delve into her mind and So we get a little like insight into Harley's personality and background.
And it's a good episode just for getting like everyone in the crew together, a bit of screen time where it's just them.
Just seeing how they play off each other.
And meanwhile, of course, you have them all lying passed out in the apartment, all wearing the matching shirts that this group keeps sending Harley to try and recruit.
Yeah, one of my notes is just Suicide Squad with an exclamation mark, because that's just so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, the manner in which he decides to kill them is to cremate them in an oven, which is, well, A, Jewish people don't cremate people, and B, that happened to a lot of people during the Holocaust, and it's kind of a sore spot. Not only does he do this, he specifically makes reference where to Jewish lightning, the practice of burning down an apartment to claim the insurance money, which is another anti-Semitic trope. And also him and another Jewish person dance around singing about cremating people, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense given the aforementioned Jewish people don't cremate.
I mean, it makes sense for him being the creepy CIA guy.
That's the thing. But it kind of does make sense with his character.
Yeah.
And it's definitely supposed to be playing off the fact that he's a creepy ex-CIA person, not the fact that he's Jewish. But as a Jewish character, it's understandably a bit uncomfortable for a lot of Jewish people watching.
Yeah. Because I kind of took it the same way, but I'm not a person to comment on it, as you say. So, and having that knowledge and that experience, so, it's probably best just it's a bit awkward, putting it mildly, really, to even go near those kind of tropes. But it was quite an anarchic, fun show that criticizes a lot of there's a lot of satire built into it. So it's a bit weird. It doesn't just completely step around those tropes, I think.
Yeah,
that's another thing with lots of other things that are going on in the show. Like if there's something bad going on, one of the characters will comment on it. But none of the characters ever comment on any of, the potentially anti-Semitic stuff. Mm. Even Harley, who's canonically Jewish. I mean, obviously she's not, she doesn't seem to be practicing or have that much connection to her Jewish roots. But you could see her, making some sort of comment about various things, and she doesn't. Mm. And that stands in stark contrast to a lot of the other things where the characters are constantly commenting on the things that are going on around them. It was actually a lack of affordable housing that destroyed Gotham and things like that. They're always commenting on the political implications of things that are happening, except for this.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think you put that very eloquently. And but I didn't really have any further notes on this episode, really.
Like I say, I don't know that much about the various other incarnations of Harley Quinn in comics and TV show and whatnot.
Mm.
But I liked that it showed her as someone who wasn't made by Joker. My understanding was that in a lot of the other incarnations, she was fairly normal before she met him.
Yeah.
And then it was him that turned her into this person. But this episode is really no, she was like that from the start. Joker just sort of unlocked some of her potential or something. But no, she was always this person. And she's not just this accessory of Joker's or this creation of Joker's.
He's someone she felt comfortable being like that around.
And I think there's maybe elements of both. That's a good question about how much did he affect her, or how much did he tap into or just like amplified what like her existing personality. So there's different ways of like doing the take on that character.
I definitely like the way this short goes with that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think,
I mean, you need your protagonist to have more of a sense of agency, so.
Yeah. Which, you know, other Harley Quinn media hasn't always done that well, let's say.
No.
And, like, I was just going to say, like, that's what this show needs. Like, it's clearly trying to be feminist, and it would be a bit difficult if its protagonist was just, like, an accessory to some man's story, which is kind of, like, what she is if she was entirely created by Joker. Also, I just want to say I really love all the references to different mind rules.
Yes.
Clayface does great with that.
Being John Malkovich rules.
Yes. That's a, yeah, that part of it's great. So episode 6, you're a damn good cop, Jim Gordon.
I may have the word adorbs written down here.
Is this one of your favourites?
No, I just have the word adorbs written down because of one thing in this episode.
Is that Clayface's hand?
It may be Clayface's hand, yes.
Weirdly adorable hand. Yeah, where do you start with this? Wow, there's so much going on.
Well, you have the attempted heist. And then you have Jim Gordon's problems.
Yeah, and it's weird because I saw season 2 before season 1. So I was surprised when watching season 1 that Jim Gordon wasn't in it much until this point, if that makes sense. And I really enjoyed him getting more screen time in this episode, I thought. I mean, his problems aren't funny. Like, you really empathise for him, but it's kind of the extent to which they make him so world-weary and on the edge all the time. Like, there's a lot of, humour in that, I think. And it's just that I loved his weird bonding montage with Clayface's severed hand and the weird relationship that developed by the end of the episode.
Like, Clayface's hand is basically a child, and Gordon tells him in graphic detail the problems of his sex life with his wife.
That is just...
No! Bad Jim Gordon!
Well, to quote Clayface's hand, well, gee, Jim, you can't judge something you don't understand.
I'm glad at least that it didn't understand what he was telling him.
Jim has issues. Boundary issues.
That is so funny, though.
So one of the things I like about the show is like how it's generally quite consistent with the characters, and like if it does something in one episode, it'll tend to like have that affect the world and come up in another episode and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't like about this episode was it seemed a little bit more like it was playing up Harley's selfishness in a way that hadn't been done before, just to service the plot of the episode and like the lesson of the episode and stuff. I didn't think, like, obviously Harley was always selfish in more of a like not really paying attention to anything else that isn't like something that she wants.
Every before, single I time think... Ivy has recommended she not do something, and she's gone off and done it anyway.
Yeah, but I think like she wasn't selfish to the point of callousness before, or to just like just not caring if one of her crew has lost their hand. So like yeah, it was a bit grating to see in this episode where like I say, I think they played it up quite a lot more than they had before, just to service the plot of the episode. And like Harley Quinn, like I think as the show in general isn't like that. most of the time.
I think that's a fair point, and I see where you're coming from. I think it kind of got a pass from me just because I found it so funny. Like, just the whole, like, the thing I remember from the episode is Clayface and Commissioner Gordon and, like, and those bits of it kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, the episode as a whole is still great.
Yeah, I think the issue there is it did her character a disservice in order to further the stuff for the other characters.
Yeah.
And it made her less consistent in order to drive that plot.
I think that's really true. I just I kind of gave it a free pass on it, I think, like in my notes, just because I enjoyed so much of it. Just like things like the jump cut to King Shark being trapped in prison and then forgetting about him and the weird reconciliation at the end. That was just it was just a lot of like good stuff in it. But I do see where you're coming from, yeah.
It's also another thing that was a bit weird was when Batman was talking to Harley in the lair. It was like, well, you've seen where my lair is now. Why shouldn't I just let you drop? And that seems like very out of character with the heroes in this, that like don't ever kill someone or like sort of directly let someone die. Obviously, they let loads of people die by like keeping the villains alive and things like that. But
yeah.
Oh, you know that she's. You know that he wasn't going to do that, and she's, like, calling his bluff there anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're going all utilitarian on it, yeah, like, they do cause a lot of damage by keeping them alive. Yeah, he does, like, kind of metamorphize? I'll skip that word that I can't say. But, like, he does transition into the Batman v Superman iteration of Batman being a bit of a jerk briefly with Ben Affleck, for sure.
I mean, given that most of the time when he's against the Joker, while the Joker and Quinn were together, the way the Joker beat him / got away was put Harley in a situation where she'd die if Batman didn't save her, and know that Batman would be forced to save her rather than letting her die. So yeah, it was a bit weird to then have him suddenly be like, why shouldn't I just let you drop to Harley? When it's like, dude, like, you literally value keeping her alive over most other things.
Kind of why I got a free pass was like, I think, was that horrendous joke about Psycho and that incredibly tall person?
Psycho's ex.
Yeah, like, quick sidebar, how did this work sexually? Not great.
I mean, it's a good question, because...
it kept that great writing and, like, vocal performances in. But yeah, I think there were tonal
Ivy's instances. Reaction to her new boyfriend.
Call me.
Call.
I love his whole speech to his son as well about how supervillains don't come from happy homes, and that's why he made his childhood absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
Like the thing afterwards about how they hate each other, but that's a good thing because they're villains, and it's just also weird and also funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, episode 7, The Line. We properly get to meet the Queen of Fables.
Yes.
Queen by name, Queen by nature.
And this is another great episode. Although it's kind of horrific, like what she does and what transpires during the.
There is a lot of blood in this episode.
Yeah.
which is weird because King Shark's around for some of it and he doesn't do the whole shark thing.
Yeah.
I guess maybe there's too much blood and he's just sort of overwhelmed.
Like, even for him, even for King Shark, like, Queen of Fables went too far. I mean, I love that image of, like, the crew being so, like, aghast and horrified at the blood everywhere from the family. Yeah, so, Queen of Fables, like, gets out of out of the tax guide book, of course. And Holly invites her to the crew. Mayhem ensues.
Steal a weather machine. classic caper.
First a force field generator, then a weather machine.
Well, yes, obviously you need to get past the laser defences.
1,000-ish lasers.
Yep, 1,000-ish.
Which, of course, we only know about because of the wonderful character that went and worked there. One of Clayface's.
Yep, so good. I just love every time Clayface goes into an explanation in depth of the backstory of every character.
I love how much it hurts Psycho every time he does it as well. You can really see, like, how Psycho is dying every time Clayface is doing it.
And this just brings us immeasurable joy.
Yeah.
Isn't this at the end where they, like, the whole... Is it this one where the whole episode is, like, pointless? Because, like, when they eventually get,
They can't figure out the password.
Yeah.
To the weather machine, and after too many failed attempts, it just destroys itself.
So, like, all this horrendous stuff happened for, like, no reason whatsoever as well.
This is also the episode that introduces what's been going on with Ivy off screen, isn't it?
What you mean when she's going off to do environment?
Yes, doing environment.
Yeah, I love her ecological conscience, like, throughout the whole series, like, despite being, you know, at least technically a supervillain.
She's not a supervillain. She's an eco-terrorist.
Yeah.
Labels matter, for sure.
Big difference. But yeah, I didn't think I would, but I really liked her relationship with Kite Man. It was absolutely great.
Even when it is peak cringe.
Oh, it's so cringe. Like, he is so cringe.
Like, I love the whole scene where, like, yeah, he's so uncool that, like, I love when Poison Ivy says, "God, you make this so hard." Like, when she's trying to, like, connect with him, and him purposefully changing his house number from 66 to 69.
Yeah, see, it was a 66, but I did a little switcheroo here with the numbers. making it real nice.
Oh, God.
Ah, cringe.
Sorry, just letting that sink in. It's amazing cringe. It really is. And despite Kite Man's, like, obliviousness and you know, the kind of way he gets treated and what it represents, he is kind of, like kind of endearing to an extent too, I think, despite his issues.
That... I think he becomes more endearing. I think he only becomes endearing to me at roughly the time when he becomes endearing to Harley. So not until season two.
Yeah.
He definitely grows on you. In a similar way to how he did on Ivy, I guess.
Like some sort of parasitic fungus.
Yeah, I like this episode, like, sort of establishes... Well, as the episode's called, the line that Harley and also her crew mostly won't cross. It's quite interesting, like, that Harley talks about, well, she doesn't just go around murdering innocent people. Like, she has definitely killed people before. So, like, is the implication of that she doesn't think any of the people that she's killed have been innocent? And then, like, what exactly innocent means. Like she's definitely killed a lot of goons or people that were kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time, but I guess for innocent, they have to be, like, entirely unconnected to, like, whatever caper she's running or whatever. Like, in the last episode, like, Shark just bit the head straight off of a guy who was just working at, what was it, Wayne Tech?
Yeah.
Like, completely casually. So, like, is that guy not innocent? Is that because he's working at Wayne Tech? Or it's an interesting line to have, really.
It's kind of like the Death Star contractors argument, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to... It's weird, the show kind of has this cake and eat it to an extent, because it kind of shows, like, the violence and the ridiculousness of that, but we're still rooting for them at the same time, and it's kind of implied it was justified, and... Or, yeah, it's kind of a balancing act that a lot of superhero stuff has to perform, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be the problem when you have... When you have a cast full of anti-villains, it's always going to be interesting exactly, like, where you put their morality and what you have them doing.
Yeah.
And still having people rooting for them. But it's interesting that this, like, explicitly set out that, you know, Harley explicitly said she's not up for murdering innocent people, rather than just, like,
yeah,
having it as an unsaid implication. And yet, the crew have killed people that one might consider innocent.
I mean, I think it was kind of to make the episode work more as well, to have more like contrast, I think, between the crew and you know, the new member, the Queen.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely for her is gratuitous killing that she seems to be very much enjoying. That seems to be what gets to them, and that she's like quite happy to have that killing happen in a very messy way.
Definitely.
And I can respect that.
Yeah.